This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 888 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. Israeli forces killed Palestinian children and adults in Gaza this week while maintaining a total closure on all but one of the crossings for a trickle of humanitarian aid. Late Wednesday night, Israeli warplanes bombed a camp forcibly displaced families in western Gaza City. Photographer Sabar Nur al-Din captured the moment an airstrike hit the camp. Reporter Mahmoud Shalha documented the impact of the strike in the immediate aftermath. He says, quote, "Right now, a forcibly displaced person's camp is being targeted with a missile."
في غرب مدينة غزة بعد تلك الغارة التي استهدفت مخيما للنازحين هنا غرب مدينة غزة.
That was from reporter Mahmoud Shalha on Wednesday night in western Gaza City. Earlier on Wednesday, Israel killed a 40-year-old man, Basil Mahmoud Abu Warda, in a drone strike west of Gaza City. Photographer Mohammed Kumsan captured footage of a civil defense worker at the scene talking about the victim, whose body, he says, was scattered in pieces. He said the rescue workers were gathering the body parts and putting them into a box and a bag. Quote, "This is what Ramadan looks like for us," the civil defense member says, adding that several bystanders were injured, including children. On March 10th, the local Wafa news agency reported that Israeli aircraft opened fire on Palestinians on agricultural land in the Al-Zuwaida area in central Gaza, injuring at least two. On Monday, Israeli forces bombed a tent camp in the same area of central Gaza, killing two women, Nur al-Shalalfa and Amal Shomali, and a 12-year-old girl, Salsabil Faraj. Amal Shomali was a 46-year-old mother and a correspondent for Qatar Radio. The Gaza government media office said that with Shomali's killing, the number of reporters and media workers killed since October 2023 now stands at 261. Amal Shomali's loved ones, including her young daughter, mourned over her body hours later. Reporter Salma Kadoumi captured this footage. On March 8th, three Palestinians were killed and others were injured in western Gaza City near Al-Azhar University after a car traveling in the area was hit by an Israeli strike. Gruesome footage includes two bodies which were severely burned and one laying face down on the ground with a trail of blood flowing meters down the street. Reporter Musab al-Sharif filmed family members and loved ones mourning over one of the men's bodies in the morgue at Al-Shifa Hospital. On March 7th, Israel killed Ahmed al-Qudra in a drone strike in Khan Yunis while he walked his four-year-old daughter, Julia, home from kindergarten. Julia was severely injured in the strike that killed her father instantly, and after 2 days of doctors attempting to save her life in the hospital, she died. Reporter Hani Al-Sha'ir captured footage of little Julia's body wrapped in a shroud and dressed in her new aid clothes, including a shiny new bracelet that was placed on top of her body, which she would have worn at the end of Ramadan, as her relatives mourned around her. On March 6th, a 13-year-old child was killed. Ismail Zuhair Akal Abdulrahman was shot and killed by Israeli gunfire in the town of Beit Lahia in northern Gaza. Since the fraudulent ceasefire was declared in October 2025, at least 650 Palestinians have been killed and more than 1,730 injured as of Wednesday, according to the Gaza Health Ministry. Israel has maintained its draconian closure of all but one of the crossings in and out of Gaza since the U.S.-Israeli attacks on Iran began on February 28th. The United Nations Human Rights Office stated that the only operational crossing point is Kerem Shalom or Karmi Abu Salem in southern Gaza. Quote, this long route is slower and more costly and increases reliance on scarce fuel inside Gaza, where movements take place on damaged roads, the UN said. The exit from Gaza of patients who need medical evacuations and the return of Palestinians from abroad remain suspended, the UN added. Palestinians are rushing to stock up on essentials as soaring prices and shortages of key items, particularly vegetables, signaled the impact of the closures, writes reporter and Electronic Intifada contributor Ahmed Dremli this week in Middle East Eye. Dremli adds, quote, but most residents of Gaza can buy only enough for a single day as prices soar and purchasing power plummets. Rana Rajab, 38, a mother of six, fears that the closure of Gaza's crossings could bring famine back, yet her family cannot afford more than daily supplies. Her husband works as a mechanic on a daily wage, meaning income and access to food varies from day to day. Since the ceasefire began, we have been suffering from poverty and hunger, Rajab told Middle East Eye. On the days my husband works, we buy food. On the days he doesn't, we rely on charity kitchens or whatever aid we can find. Rising prices have worsened the situation. Many goods, especially vegetables, have doubled in price, she said. Meanwhile, basic infrastructure such as water, electrical, and sewage services remain in ruins after nearly 2.5 years of genocide. On March 6th, reporter Ala Hamouda spoke to children in the Tal al-Hawa neighborhood of Gaza City who struggle to obtain water under the current circumstances. One child with a broken cart says, quote, we fill up water, go over there, and come back. We're completely worn out by the water situation. The reporter asks how many times a day he does this, and the child responds, quote, we come back, we find more water, and go again. Jorge Morea da Silva, the head of the United Nations Infrastructure Management Agency, UNOPS, stated that on March 5th, one of the agency's tankers was on its way to collect fuel for distribution inside Gaza and was struck from, quote, the direction of the sea. He did not name the attacker, but only Israeli naval ships are stationed there. No one was injured, da Silva added, but the tanker was directly hit and damaged, and he called for a full investigation into the incident. The day after, the Israeli army admitted that its naval forces indeed struck the fuel tanker, but claimed it was, quote, unintentional. Euromed Human Rights Monitor released a report this week on Israel's ongoing obstruction of education in Gaza, 28 months into the genocide, quote, through systematic and deliberate policies aimed at preventing the population from restoring education. These policies, the rights group notes, quote, include the ongoing blockade, the targeting of civilian objects, including educational facilities, through bombing and destruction, the prevention of reconstruction, and the obstruction of the entry of materials, equipment, and operational resources needed to rehabilitate and run schools and universities. As a result, hundreds of thousands of students remain cut off from formal education. Euromed says that, quote, this entrenches scholasticide within a broader policy of destroying the foundations of life in the enclave and stripping society of its ability to survive and recover, while advancing forced displacement and the coercive reshaping of the demographic and social reality. The rights group has so far documented the killing of nearly 19,000 school pupils and more than 1,300 higher education students, in addition to the injury of thousands more students of every age who sustained varying injuries. Furthermore, Israeli army attacks have killed 794 teachers and 246 university faculty members and researchers, while injuring thousands more. The Israeli army directly bombed 668 school buildings, completely destroyed 179 public schools, and severely damaged 118 others, in addition to bombing and vandalizing 100 schools administered by UNRWA, the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees. A total of 63 university buildings were completely destroyed, with severe damage inflicted on the remaining universities and colleges, Euromed says. And marking International Women's Day, Amnesty International released a report on the impact that Israel's genocide has had and continues to have on women's reproductive health in Gaza. Women have been forced to give birth without adequate medical care, to endure pregnancy and postpartum recovery while displaced in overcrowded and unsanitary sites, and to navigate hunger, disease, and trauma with little privacy, protection, or access to essential services, often while caring for others, the report states. Agnes Callamard, Amnesty International's Secretary General, stated, quote, "Women in Gaza are being denied the conditions needed to live and to give life safely. This systematic erosion of their rights to health, safety, dignity, and a future is not an unfortunate byproduct of war. It is a deliberate act of war targeting women and girls. It is also the foreseeable consequence of Israel's calculated policies and practices of multiple mass displacement, deliberate restrictions on basic and essential items, as well as humanitarian relief, and 2 years of relentless bombardment that have devastated Gaza's health system and decimated entire families. There has been a total collapse of maternal and neonatal health services," the report states, as 60% of all health service points remain non-functional, and as immense pressure is placed on the few that remain operational and the fewer that provide emergency obstetric care. Nearly 50% of all medications remain at zero stock, including drugs for managing and inducing contractions, labor and postpartum hemorrhage, anesthesia and pain management, infections and respiratory conditions, according to the Palestinian Ministry of Health in Gaza. Medical personnel interviewed by Amnesty International said that even since the so-called ceasefire, quote, "women who give birth endured extreme shortages of food, medicines, and nutritional supplements during much of their pregnancy and postpartum." They said that most women who come to deliver in hospitals suffer from anemia because of malnutrition and from waterborne diseases, vaginitis, and other infections because of polluted water and unsanitary conditions. In the Al-Helu obstetric department, neonatologist Dr. Nasser Bulbol said in the Amnesty report that the number of high-risk pregnancies they receive has significantly increased as mothers' immune systems have been compromised because of malnutrition. Quote, "displacement conditions have led to infectious diseases, and most women come here under stress, trauma, and uncertainty, having suffered multiple displacements, lost loved ones, and unable to obtain the nutritious food they require," he said. Agnes Callamard said that, quote, "women in Gaza are holding families and communities together under conditions designed to break them. They are the teachers providing schooling to children in tents, the doctors and nurses working in field hospitals, often without pay, and the caregivers fighting tirelessly to keep hope alive amidst genocide. Their courage commands immense respect and stands as an inspiration to all of humanity," she added. She called on states to take meaningful action to end Israel's genocide and unlawful occupation, quote, "including by ensuring women and girls can access their fundamental rights and securing a future where all Palestinians can live in dignity." Turning to the occupied West Bank, Israeli settlers killed at least 5 Palestinians in attacks this week. On Sunday, March 8th, 2 Palestinians were shot and killed by Jewish Israeli settlers in the village of Hirbet Abu Falah, northwest of Ramallah, according to the Palestinian Ministry of Health. Fareh Jawdat Hamayel and Thaer Farouk Hamayel were both shot in the head. The Wafa news agency reported that a third Palestinian, 55-year-old Mohammed Hassan Moura, later died from the fumes of tear gas fired by Israeli soldiers who accompanied the settlers. Later on Sunday, 27-year-old Amir Mohammed Shanran was killed by settlers after an attack in Masafer Yatta, south of Hebron. Mohammed Rabai, head of the village council in nearby Atouani village, told Agence France-Presse that settlers had entered homes in the area and attacked Shanran and his family before killing him. Al Jazeera reported that Israeli settlers shot and killed a man and wounded his brother during an attack in the village of Wadi al-Rakim in the south. On March 6th, activist and journalist Adel Shoko reported from the village of Douma during a settler attack. Along with this video, Shoko stated, quote, "Settlers in Douma were shooting at Palestinians, attacked solidarity activists, and beat a Palestinian man with bats. When the Israeli army arrived, they arrested me and four Palestinians. One of them is a 13-year-old boy. Another was injured and needed an ambulance, but instead was taken to jail. Now all the activists have been forced from Douma, which led to settler pogroms and eventually expulsion of Palestinian families." That's from Adel Shoko. The Israeli military says it is dropping charges against five soldiers who were accused of sexually assaulting a Palestinian detainee in an attack by a group of soldiers at the notorious Sidi Tayman torture camp that was partially caught on camera in July 2024. As we reported, when footage of the rape was leaked to the press, the UN Human Rights Office stated that it has, quote, documented a number of videos in recent months which show gross violations of the rights of Palestinians detained by Israel, including acts of ill treatment, torture, sexual violence, and rape. My colleague Ali Abu Nima wrote that, quote, "The Sidi Tayman video led to outrage in Israel, not about the attack it showed, but in defense of the soldiers. It sparked right-to-rape protests by Israelis demanding the soldiers' release, while senior officials justified their actions." Yifat Tomer Yerushalayimi, the Israeli military prosecutor who leaked the video in a failed effort to tamp down the outrage over the soldiers' arrests, resigned and was arrested and placed in home detention. Meanwhile, the soldiers accused of the rape continued to be treated as heroes. We've published many features in the last week, but we wanted to highlight Lost Paperwork Prompts Fears for Property Rights by Malik Hijazi, writing from Gaza. When Aziza al-Mashouki, 62, a retired teacher, fled Rafah in May 2024, she left behind her house deeds, marriage certificate, and family photo albums, Hijazi writes. Quote, "Months later, displaced in Egypt, she learned that everything was gone. Her home, her papers, her pictures, all proof of what her life had been. Thousands of families in Gaza face similar losses. A survey conducted by the Palestinian Housing Council between May and July 2025 found widespread loss of ownership papers. In Gaza City, 71% of respondents reported losing their property documents, while in Khan Yunis and Rafah, up to 83% of women reported losing theirs. Al-Mashouki never imagined she would be leaving her home forever. It never occurred to me to take the house papers with me. Many displaced people were sheltering in our home, so we left it for them. I didn't think the house would ever be destroyed." When Al-Mashouki left Rafah in May 2024, the city was sheltering over a million internally displaced Palestinians and had become a temporary humanitarian refuge, facing an impending Israeli ground invasion, which former U.S. President Joe Biden described as a red line. The invasion went ahead. Biden did nothing to prevent it and nothing to punish Israel for crossing his red line. Now, more than 90% of Rafah's neighborhoods have been completely or partially destroyed, with Israeli forces maintaining heavy military control over much of the city, preventing two-thirds of residents from returning to what is left of their homes. "We don't have digital copies of our ownership documents," Al-Mashouki told the Electronic Intifada via WhatsApp. We worry that our right to the house will be lost because we have no proof it belongs to us. Neighbors can testify, but the fear remains. For now, al-Mashouki has no plans to return to Gaza. There is nothing left. But she emphasizes that if reconstruction ever takes place, she would return without hesitation because, quote, a person has nothing but their homeland. In addition to individual documents, Israel also destroyed the central archives of Gaza municipality in November 2023, erasing centuries of property records, maps, and historical documents in yet another of Israel's countless violations of the laws of war. The Gaza municipality told the Electronic Intifada via email that they have launched electronic services and interactive maps to assist residents. Any citizen who previously had documents archived at Gaza municipality can apply to obtain digital copies of these documents, the municipality added. While residents struggle to reclaim what they have lost, plans for Gaza's future are also being drawn up far from the people who live there. In January, the U.S. president's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, presented AI-generated images of a new Gaza at the World Economic Forum in Davos, envisioning residential towers, data centers, luxury resorts, parks, sports facilities, and a new airport. These proposals include no indication of how the rights of those who have lost everything will be recognized or protected, or how displaced people can reclaim their homes in areas behind the yellow line. Under Palestinian and international law, the right to property is inherent and does not vanish if documents are lost, says Abdallah Sharshara, a Palestinian lawyer and human rights advocate. But without documents, claiming rights in courts or government offices is much harder. It creates serious obstacles in registration, compensation, and protection from encroachment, especially in systems that exploit legal gaps to dispossess Palestinians, he told the Electronic Intifada. The destruction of legal records follows a dangerous historical pattern. After the 1948 Nakba, hundreds of thousands of displaced Palestinians lost the documents that proved their ownership. Even those that held on to their documents found them useless, as Israel later instituted the 1950 Absentees Property Law, which classified displaced Palestinians as absentees and transferred their land and homes to the state, enabling mass confiscation and causing today's unresolved Palestinian refugee issue, afflicting millions of people. Today, international law provides broader, largely theoretical protections, but their effectiveness remains dependent on political will and actual enforcement, Sharshara said. The new Gaza proposal heightens fears. It treats Gaza as a blank slate, disregarding Palestinians who lost their homes and documents, as well as Gaza's heritage and history, while allowing outside investors to shape Gaza's future without protecting residents' rights. Those are excerpts from Lost Paperwork Prompts Fears for Property Rights by Malek Hejazi, writing from Gaza on electronicintifada.net. And now, as we always do, we wanted to highlight people expressing joy, determination, and reclamation across Palestine and around the world. Journalist Salma Kadoumi, whose footage we highlighted earlier, not only reports from scenes of unbearable pain and grief, but also from places where young Palestinians find relief and strength. On International Women's Day, Kadoumi spent time with girls who are learning the art of boxing. She captioned this video, quote, "Boxing is a refuge for the girls of the tents, where they find a space to breathe away from the atmosphere of tension and psychological pressure." That's from reporter Salma Kadoumi, and that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.